1.
Good evening and welcome to The Late Debate with Justin McCarthy. Tonight, money under the mattress. The Taoiseach talks of tax cuts in the budget, but where is he going to get the cash? Bin charge bonanza. Is the new refuse charging regime a free-for-all for service providers? And Chucky Garleen. Will the DUP agree to an Irish Language Act in Northern Ireland? We'll discuss those issues and more after the news with Ray Kennedy. Thank you very much, Ray Kennedy. Now joining me in studio tonight is the Fine Gael MEP, Brian Hayes, the Sinn Féin TD for Waterford, David Cullinan, the Solidarity People Before Profit TD for Dunleary, Richard Boyd Barrett, Tony Foley, Senior Lecturer in Economics at Dublin City University, and Niamh Lyons, Political Editor for the Times Ireland edition. You can text the programme on 51551, email latedebate@rte.ie, or tweet us on @latedebaterte. Now, Taoiseach Leo Varadkar has said that he is determined that the government will have enough money to cut income tax in October's budget, even if that means raising other taxes. Tony Foley, he wants to give something back to workers. Has he got his priorities wrong here? Shouldn't he be diverting the available funds to the people who need it most?
Well, there's a lot of workers who'd feel they need it if they're paying very high taxes on average industrial wage or less than the average industrial wage. And remember as well that in the agreement with Fianna Fáil, there's a ratio of expenditure and tax that has to be adhered to.
So while the That's two-thirds, one-third ratio.
So though the Taoiseach is talking about as if it's going to be a tax giveaway, of course it's not going to be. He has about 550 million to play around with in fiscal space which hasn't been used, and we have to take about 200 million out of that for the pay increases. So there's about 350 million there to play with, and a 1% change in income tax would be 200 million. Now that's just 1% on the total, not a 1% rate. So it's very small amounts of money. So when we come to budget day, we're going to have the usual disappointment that the income tax package will be about 250 million or so.
But he is talking then, he's talking about what he called hidden fiscal space, which is if you cut spending,
that's cuts in another man's language. Government talks about hidden fiscal space, and they put in a little item in their usual budget saying savings on better procurement and better organisation and so on. And of course, as the Taoiseach says, in a budget of 50 to 60 billion, there's obviously space to save money. But that's always the case, and governments aren't too successful in doing that. They're more successful in spending it than saving it.
Richard Boyd Barrett, is he right to give people back, working people, the people who get up early in the morning, as he said himself, to give them back something in this budget?
Well, the devil is in the detail in these things. If it's a give back to high earners, absolutely no justification.
What do you class as a high earner?
I think people earning over 70,000 euro don't need a tax break. I think those earning less who are still hit with the USC and many of whom are on very, very low wages, to get a break on the USC would be justified. But I have to cut across the sort of narrative that it is a choice or should be a choice between do we give a tax break to genuinely struggling working families, or do we put money, which we desperately need to do, into housing, health, infrastructure, capital spending. The truth is there's not enough in what's available in the famous fiscal space to do the things that need to be done in either area. So we have to find extra money. And then the question is, do we find it, as Leo Varadkar is hinting, through cuts, which I think we absolutely should not do, or do we find it by raising extra tax revenue from people who can actually afford to pay something extra? And I would certainly favour the latter, obviously, which is about taxing. We had a report this week, the WealthX report, the third or fourth report in the last year or two, confirming there's been a dramatic increase in the wealth of the super rich in this country. The 1,300 richest people in this country who have more than 30 to 50 million euro each or more, the number of those people has jumped by another 6% in the last year alone.
Brian,
so let's tax some of that wealth.
Brian, what about that point? Like, if you only have a small amount of money available, giving people a fiver or a tenner back in their income tax is not going to make much of a difference. Whereas if you plough that money into services, improve education or the health service, you could do a lot more. You could do a lot better with that money.
Well, I think the salient point is the point that's been made by Tony, which is the amount of space for either tax cuts and general increases in expenditure, current or capital, is small. And it was always going to be small this year. And actually, you know, when you factor out the public sector pay deal, I think it's about half a billion or so. But that assumes, of course, that over the next number of months, we're going to hit our targets on the tax side. We have, like, it's fair to say, the returns in the first quarter are not spectacular, particularly on the income tax side. We have seen some good figures back on VAT. So it's dependent on other figures coming in later on the year. Now, what the Taoiseach said, and I read his speech today fully, I think it's a very balanced speech. I mean, he didn't just speak about tax cuts. He spoke about making further progress on reducing consistent poverty, doing something in terms of private, those 60% of the private sector have no pension.
But is this about ideology for
no, 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 this is the point I'm making. Just
he spoke about this during the election campaign.
You know, it is the government policy. The government policy has made it very clear, if there is space available on a ratio of 2-1, on the ratio of 2 for additional expenditure, 1 on the basis for tax reform, we will continue to do that. And what the Taoiseach said, I think, outside the venue today, was that even if there is, even if it's small on the tax reform, we should continue to do it. Why? Because in this country, anything over €30,000, you're whacked at 50%. That is completely out of kilter to our nearest neighbour. It's out of kilter to other competitors. We have a situation in Ireland where it's not so much the rate, the marginal rate is high, which it is, it's the moment which you start paying it. The top 10% of income earners in this country, that, you know, the top of the pile, pay 60% of the totality of all income tax. 50% of tax payers on the income tax side pay 96% of all tax. The other 50% pay 4%. We have very progressive, the OECD says, we have a very progressive tax system. In other words, the more you earn, the more you pay. But in recent years, what's happened is that a group of workers find themselves in this very high marginal tax rate at relatively small amounts of income. Now, I don't think there's massive scope in the context of the upcoming budget and even next year to do a huge amount on this. But I think the Taoiseach's point is right, that we should do even small things to make sure we say to that group of people, this is an issue we have to address.
David Cunlan, can I just ask you, I mean, the last election, a lot of people said it was about the squeeze middle and helping the squeeze middle. Isn't that what Leo Varadkar is looking to do in this next budget? Give the people, as he says, who get up early in the morning.
He spoke about working families. That's the phrase he used today.
Thanks, Brian, for that. Yep. Well, first of all, if you want to go back to the last election campaign, what was promised was the abolition of the universal social charge. That seems to have gone by the wayside. We were the party that said that wasn't possible, given the huge pressures on public
not
spending
first
that we had. Brian, I didn't interrupt you.
You were the party in favour of abolishing USC initially.
If Brian wants to have a debate, we just cut across each other, that's fine. It's a debate.
I got
barely
Leo 30 was seconds. Out about that
30
today
seconds.
Good. It is the truth. Sinn Féin's position initially was to abolish
USC. Please let David finish his point.
It isn't a debate. A democracy is you allow people to speak. So I didn't.
So you've changed your position in USC.
We never said that we want to abolish the universal social
charge. That's not true.
That is true.
Look back on your own party manifesto in the previous election. Richard Boybar is smiling because he knows I'm telling the truth in this.
If you want to go back over the course of the election campaign, it was very clear that one of the few parties that said we should not abolish the universal social charge, which was popular in some quarters, but we said it should not be done because the money should be prioritised for public spending. And that's the first issue. I'm glad, though, that you did raise the top 10% income earners, because they are the people who will benefit from this tax cut that Leo talked about. What he's talking about is reducing the marginal tax rate below 50%, 50% or below. So here are the revenue figures, and they are from revenue. These are the real figures. 1.5 million workers pay 45.5% in taxes, in terms of 517,300 pay 40% higher rate, and then in terms of USC, 1 million pay 5.5%. Only 217,000 pay over 50%, pay the 8% universal social charge rate. So the instincts of Leo are coming to the fore here, where what he wants to do is give a tax cut to the top 10% income earners at a time when we have huge pressures in health, huge pressures in housing, huge pressures in childcare. And worse than that, we had an Oireachtas committee recently that signed off on the need to invest $3.3 billion in healthcare to bring about a fair and a universal healthcare system in this state. We know in education, education, that the Castles report has looked for billions to be spent in education.
Okay,
over the next
so there's
years.
Plenty demands.
None of that is possible. Right. None of that is possible if you are at the same time promising to cut taxes, especially for the top 10%. So, like all of these promises, the devil is in the detail, and we'll see exactly what will happen. But it won't be, as was said by Tony, those on the average industrial wage who will benefit from this tax cut. It will be primarily the top 10%.
How do you know?
Who will be the big winners?
How do you know?
Because that's why percentage.
He's made no proposal. He said that he wants to reduce the marginal tax rate below 50%, which affects only 10% of the
He might want to reduce the marginal tax rate for people at particular incomes, and you could do that by changing the allowances while leaving the rates the same. And in fact, in recent times, when it looked like the richer part would get more of the benefits, we changed the USC to balance it out, as it were, so everyone got the same up to 70, or everyone didn't get anything extra over 70,000. So there's lots of ways it can be played with. Mm. But I think Richard Boyd Barrett made a much more valid point at the beginning, that we're sort of focused on the fiscal space. And probably one of the big issues for us as a society would be what sort of society we want and whether we're willing to pay the taxes to do so. So we'd look at social services in Denmark and Sweden, but their taxes, a percentage of GDP, would be 40%, 45%. Ours would be about a third. Mm. So as a society, we obviously want those social services. Are we willing to pay those taxes, and where would those taxes fall?
Isn't that, Niamh Lyons, a political choice? Is Leo Varadkar here appealing to his political base by saying, I'm going to give you a fiver to back in your income tax because you're the people who vote for me.
Yeah, and I suppose one of the other interesting things, apart from the so-called hidden fiscal space that we heard about today, the Taoiseach also didn't rule out revenue-raising measures. Now, he mentioned cigarettes. That's an easy one. Excise duties, though, on cigarettes and alcohol are kind of close, I think, to that tipping point whereby so much smuggling and overseas imports of that you're not going to get as much back from a hike, you know. The other thing you could do, I suppose the only obvious one, would be an increase in the property tax. But I mean, Fine Gael would basically wipe themselves out of every Dublin seat they currently hold in the Dáil. So there doesn't seem to be much scope for him to gain anything there. I think the big tug of war comes into play now between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, and how each of them manages to pitch themselves in the run-up this budget. I think, you know, there was talk that Fine Gael shouldn't be allowed to find money down the back of the couch. I think Fianna Fáil have now been given enough notice about how much the envelope that's there is, about 800 million.
Isn't that going to be one of the big problems for him? That if, as he says, talking about this hidden fiscal space, and if he wants to cut 1% off spending and gain an extra 560 million... he's not going to be allowed to do that. Fianna Fáil aren't going to allow those services.
But he was talking about waste and efficiencies. Which is very
hard. As you said yourself,
if it's as easy as that, why stop at 1%? Why not go from 5%?
We've come through 10 years of austerity, and we've had huge cuts in public spending over the last 10 years. To imagine that there is all this low-lying fruit where 1% of the overall spending, which is what he talked about, which would raise 530 million, can be magically found as fanciful. Yeah. And really what has been talked about here is we'll cut public spending to provide tax cuts for the top 10%.
No.
And I have to say this, if I can just make this point. Mm. I don't have people coming into my constituency clinic, and I meet people all of the time who tell me they want a tax cut. What they want are proper public services. We have people who come into us all the time who can't depend on the public health service, people who have pressures in relation to sending their children to third level education, people who are faced with rising rents, especially in Dublin. They're the real issues that affect people. So giving somebody on 40 or 50,000 €5 a week into their pocket at a cost of not providing public services.
Maybe Leo has lots of people coming into his clinic looking for tax reductions.
Well, certainly not in mine.
I think we need to repeat
the point again. The magnitude for tax reform in the upcoming budget is small. The magnitude for increased expenditure is small.
But has the Taoiseach created an expectation that it's going to be bigger than reality?
He's spoken about a group of people who find themselves on a very small additional income paying 50% of each euro over that amount of income. That's the focus. That's the group of people he wants to help. It will take some years to do a huge amount on tax reform. The other point that Tony made, I think, is really the essential point here. The OECD have said to us, because, the left continually say, We want the Scandinavian model of taxation. The Scandinavian model of taxation effectively means that people on average industrial pay are paying, on average, somewhere between 10 to 12% more in the totality of their tax a year. And if you're seriously trying to get that additional money to actually fund the additional service that you want to do, if that's your objective, it means a hell of a lot more tax from people on average pay, because the totality of workers paying that is such that you need to do that if you're serious.
Is that what we want?
That's the great hocus pocus that the left constantly
talks about. I've kept quiet now while you have all come in twice.
Richard.
So let me come in for a minute. there's an absolute refusal to look at certain possibilities for raising revenue. Now, if you continue to do this, you're going to get the same shock that Theresa May got in Britain, that happened with Bernie Sanders, and that is happening all across Europe. So I think people should start to recognise there's a new narrative emerging, which is starting to talk about taxing wealth, the corporations, excessive incomes of the very, very highest earners.
It works in campaigns, though, but where in reality can you point to that it's worked?
Where has it worked that we redistribute wealth by taxing those?
No, sorry, that's not the question I asked. You said you're talking about Bernie Sanders and Jeremy Corbyn and so on.
Macron,
you know, they've had good campaigns,
sure,
maybe, but beyond the campaign, where do you go then?
In the 1950s and 1960s, you had much higher taxes on wealth. Corporation taxes were often 50%, 60%. Wealth tax on the very highest earnings were often in that sort of territory.
In Ireland.
Across Europe. And then we did have money for social housing. We did have money for a national health service, for example, in Britain. We had money for huge expansion in public expenditure in the welfare state, because there was a tax system which levied taxes on excessive wealth, profits and earnings. But in the last 25 years, the taxes on the wealthiest sections of society have been reduced down. Simultaneously, wages as a share of national income have fallen by about 20% across Europe. So the wages workers earn don't buy them anything anymore. They have all sorts of backdoor charges, taxes for hospitals, for bins, for water, except for we defeated that. So the working families are hammered, while those at the top are getting richer and richer. And every single report confirms this. And people are beginning to cop on to that. And that's why they accept that so many people voted for Corbyn, so many people are voting for Sanders in the United States, for Mélenchon in France, for Syriza, for Podemos.
But you had a good run there, Nant. A wealth tax... I would argue that a property tax is a wealth tax.
Should we increase property tax then, Richard?
No, because that is on ordinary families. That's ordinary families paying more.
The bigger the home, the more you get.
But that's not the tax we have, right? That's not the tax we have. We have a tax that is crippling people just because they happen to live in a house.
Richard, can I just go through what...
Their income could be pitifully low.
You've got a good second run now.
You're on your third.
There's two hard left people here against once centre-ground politician. I'm just going to go through what we did. I want to go through the taxes we increased.
Please don't.
We increased dirt tax, we increased CGT, we increased a capital acquisition tax, we increased VAT to the top level, we introduced a levy on the banks, we introduced a pension levy, very controversial, you opposed that as well, of course. We had a new tax, radically checked tax in terms of landlords. All of this stuff has made a big difference. 2 million people are working in our economy at the moment. If you look at the figures in the last 12 months, 65,000 net new jobs created. That's all positive. The reason why people aren't feeling the economy turning is income tax, that the 2 million people who are currently working in Ireland are paying 19 billion in tax, where 8 years ago they were paying 12 billion tax. So to suggest that tax on income hasn't increased, it has increased for a whole reason. Reasons on index and indexation. And the other point, just let me finish the point, on corporation tax. We have seen, and there's a danger in this, corporation profit tax in Ireland effectively double over the past 3 years, from about 3.5 billion to just shy of 7 billion, I think slightly over 7 billion. It might come down this year. There are dangers in that. If we, for instance, were out by €1 billion next year, how would we make up the shortfall in corporation? And one of the reasons why corporation profit tax is going up all over Europe is because of the OECD BEPS agenda. We are cutting out the aggressive tax planning on an international basis, which you have to do. It's made a big difference in Ireland. We've doubled corporation profit tax in Ireland in the last 3 years.
Okay, first of all, throwing out labels like the hard left doesn't impress anybody and doesn't achieve anything. But I want to go back to a point that Tony made earlier.
Richard's the only genuine left. You're not actually left.
Which I fully agree with, which is the starting point should be we have to work out as a society what services we want. There has been some attempt, and I believe a good attempt made in recent times in the Oireachtas by all parties to do that on a number of issues. We had it in housing, where we had an all-party report on housing, and it outlined what we needed to do and how much money was necessary to build the homes that people need. We have it in healthcare, where we have a report called Slánta, which is an all-party report again, and it commits to 10-year spending, a 10-year spending programme of €3.3 billion over 10 years to bring about a fair health service. And we have it in education, where we have the Castles report, where we know...
Okay, so there's plenty of reports
what
there
I'm saying
tell you
is
where
to spend
the
money. None of that is possible, because what Brian is right is that obviously we have to point to where increased revenue can come from, and we do that to pay for all of these services. But equally,
none of it is possible,
Brian, if you cut taxes. So what I'm saying is, how can you on one hand sign up to reports on education, housing and health, and we want to do all of these
things, but at
the same time
to Tony
promise
Foley
to cut taxes, it's simply not doable.
What is the scope there? Where could he raise revenue?
Well, to be fair to Sinn Féin, in their budget documents, they identified things like wealth tax, increased tax rate on people earning over a certain level of income and so on. So a higher marginal rate of tax as opposed to a lower one. And Richard as well will be talking about wealth taxes and so on. So there are taxes to be earned from a given amount of money. The worry that lots of people would have is, well, if you have a wealth tax, does it generate exits of rich people and so on and so forth? There's certainly money there. But I think the big issue is a really serious discussion about how much money we want to collect. One of the strange things about our economy is that we're relatively low tax as a percentage of GDP compared to most European economies. Now, GDP is a bit of a mess and so on. But even allowing for that, we're still relatively low. But on the other hand, lots of people think they're very heavily taxed. For example, we have the highest alcohol taxes in Europe virtually. We've brought in a property tax, so we no longer have that escape, but yet the total amount of tax comes out relatively low. But we're very good on corporation profits tax. Not, I don't think, because the OECD plan is working or anything. I think it was a lot of companies came in to domicile here and we got the benefit of the tax returns.
But David spoke there about all of the various reports which would instruct the government on how they could improve services if they had the money. Do you detect that there's any willingness to address those issues, or is it
there's a willingness to address them incrementally in terms of like fiscal space, that we've got an extra couple of €100 million, we'll put it into health or we'll put it elsewhere. There's no willingness, I think, on the part of the public that I have seen and most of the political parties to identify clearly what the tax implications would be. And it's easy enough to say, and I'd go along a bit of the way with Brian in terms of tax the rich. That's great because they're out there and they're not us. But if it is tax income tax, put up VAT to 30% or so on to collect money, well, that starts to affect the entire population and there mightn't be the appetite. But it is something we should be talking about.
Niamh Lyons is a texter in here. John in Dublin 11 says that I think Leo is preparing the ground for a general election to get out of the political bind Fine Gael are under. What do you think of that?
Don't know. I think the experience from London and Theresa May's attempt to bolster her government is a cautionary tale for Leo Varadkar. You have to go to the people with a record. I think he has to get at least one budget through. I wouldn't be surprised, perhaps, if we've had an election by this time.
But is that why he's doing this then? Is that why he's promising tax cuts?
But it's funny because
if he does want to get a budget through, he has to sell something.
I think he's actually promising that because I think he wants a kind of to make it look like this budget is going to be very Brexit focused. They want to make it look like we're going to be an attractive place for people to move and work. We're also bidding for two London-based European agencies to move here. I think people will get a shock if they see what rate their income tax kicks in at. I also think people took out the magnifying glass when the January USE decrease kicked in. It just didn't seem a lot. And I think something that David said struck me. I mean, the Sláinte report is one thing. It's a very expensive way to do it, but there's a sort of a need for a 5 billion and then up to 10 billion investment in health services. But if you took something like housing, and Leo Varadkar himself, when he was appointing his ministerial team, acknowledged the fact that social housing isn't happening quickly enough. I think all the ships in the harbour would come up together if they decided to pick one particular area and invest heavily. I mean, mental health services is probably another area that they could do that in, and certainly general health.
But votes in that?
There's certainly votes in the housing. I mean, when you look as well at the type of people that we're trying to attract here, again, you know, there's plenty of office space, but there's no living space. And I think sometimes instead of going for the kind of small little bitty thing, they should probably do the big bang. But politically, I suppose it doesn't help.
But it's also important that we don't reduce this to glib soundbites as well, because, and in fairness to Tony, and I say this respectfully, it isn't as simple as, and the slogans are not simply tax the rich. We put an awful lot of work in our alternative budgets where we look at different revenue streams. I was on a number of programmes with Fine Gael representatives, and they describe parties of the left as populist. The same party during the course of the election campaign said we'll abolish the universal social charge at a cost of 4 billion euros.
You didn't say that.
4 billion. You said you would phase out the universal. In fact, no, you did.
In the circle.
You said you would abolish the universal. No, no. You said you would abolish universal social. The European Commission came out today and said they would be opposed to the universal social charge being abolished. So we stood against that tsunami of calls from Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael to abolish the universal social charge, because we knew that it was simply not possible, and we've been proven right.
There's really a bigger issue here, and I go back to the point. You know, we're talking about a minuscule amount of money on the expenditure and tax side in terms of the total amount of money we spend. We're spending 53 billion euro this year. You know, we're talking about 500 million. It's minuscule in terms of the total amount. Well, I think what you asked the question, what voters want. I think the great majority of voters who have seen what's happened in the past decade really want to see the economy continue to recover at a sustainable rate. The SRI said some time ago, if you got an average 3% growth over the next 10 years, you effectively could put on close to a third in terms of the wealth of the country. Now, the question is, what we do with that additional resources, assuming you were to get that. And I think what most people, I mean, I agree, most people aren't obsessing on the tax side, but there's a group of people there on modest incomes who find themselves clobbered. That's the group of people that the Taoiseach is concentrating on. And I would ask people to say, in fairness to the Taoiseach, in his speech today, when he spoke about consistent poverty, when he spoke about the pension issue, when he spoke about index-linking pensions for older people, that's his agenda. And the media obsess on the tax side because it helps their portray the Taoiseach in a certain way.
Richard Boybart.
Can I just point out something that he's just never acknowledged, right? Profits have gone. You said corporate tax revenue has gone up. The reason it's gone up is because profits have gone up from about 70 billion gross pre-tax profits 2 or 3 years ago to 95 billion. That's where
they're domiciling here.
No. It's up to profits have gone up consistently every year since 2012. Okay, and you know some of the areas.
And we're getting it.
Hold on, Brian. I didn't interrupt you. Right, they've gone up consistently every single year. And you know where some of these profits are being made? Have a guess. Property. Right. At the same time, we've been a housing crisis. Enormous profits are being made by a small group of people in the area of property who are actually benefiting from the housing crisis. So there is a transfer of wealth going on. Similarly, I refer to the report, the WealthX report, and we've had reports like this every year, two or three of them, every single year for the last 4 or 5 years, showing that the wealth of the top 10% of this population is growing and growing exponentially. Now, if your tax system is progressive, why is that happening?
Well, that's the OECD.
Why is the gap between rich and poor growing? Why, Brian, if I can just finish this, The share of the cake. You see, a big issue that is never debated is the share of the cake. Mm-hmm. How much is going to workers in general with wages, and how much is going to profits, bonuses, and to the high earners?
Okay.
And the truth is, there has been a massive transfer to the wealthy over the last 20 years.
The most interesting intervention today came from none of the people, bar the independent people around
the table. Respond to my point.
The most interesting intervention came at the conference I was on today from an American economist who was speaking. I know Sean Healy reacted to it, but it was a fascinating observation. He said, according to his information, in terms of sharing economic growth, Ireland was the 11th most progressive country in the world in terms of the share of economic growth. It was a very interesting observation.
You could hear the laughter around
the second point. If you look at the OECD...
To be fair on that point, when you look at the amount of people who were without homes in this country and you look at the evidence on the ground...
That's no doubt, Justin. But that's not going to be solved by banjaxing the economy. That will be solved by getting the resources that are there spent. The government have a plan to spend close to 10 billion, sorry, 5 billion over the course of the next 5 years on social housing. The issue will be spending that money. It's not about the money. But the other point is this.
Would you address the point I made, Brian?
I will, actually. The OECD average tax take on corporate profit tax is 10%, Richard. In other words, if you actually look at the average, what the OECD say in terms of what normal economies collect from the corporate side, it's 10%.
And here it's about last 6. Year, here it's about 6.
Last year, 15%. Of the totality of tax collected in our economy came from corporate.
About 6% of the profits.
That is true.
About 6%.
What I'm saying is true. Look at the facts. You're not acquainted with the facts.
Tony Foley.
Yeah, in terms of the facts, the facts are that there is a redistribution of income away from wages and labour income towards other sources of income. And that is a big problem for future societies if that continues and so on. Because then obviously you have large groups of people who don't feel any particular benefit in the system, as it were. But in terms of our tax system, one of the reasons, and I agree with you, with lots of people have made money from profits on property, which shouldn't have happened, and buying something from NAM and selling it dearer. And so on. But one of the reasons we have the tax system we have, a 12.5% on virtually everything, although some have a slightly higher tax rate, is because of the EU. Once upon a time, you're right, we had zero tax on exports for multinationals, and we had a full 30, 40, 50% corporation profits tax on banks and accountancy
and
firms
manufacturing
and so
tax,
on.
Yeah.
And then we said, that's fine by us. We joined the EU, and then the EU said, oh, no, that's kind of a subsidy to exports. You have to have the same tax. So then we had to have a 10% for manufacturing, whether it's produced domestically or exported, and the rest was higher.
Can I just remind Brian first?
Sorry, later on the Commission came back and said, no, you can't have a 10% for manufacturing and something for everyone else. You have to have one profits tax. And because of our dependence on multinationals, we went for the 12.5%. And that's the real bugbear.
But equally,
if we
could have a
12.5% for multinationals,
if I can,
we would have.
There's a lot of people who want to increase our corporate
tax. If I can remind Brian of two things. One, the banjaxed economy that we did have in this state did not come from the left or policies that my party put forward. It came from casino capitalism, as you well know.
But
that's what banjaxed the economy.
You would have spent more.
But when you talked about the squeeze middle, and there are people who on middle incomes do need help, but those people, if they live in Dublin and parts of the country outside of Dublin, pay up to 50% of their income on rents. That's the crisis that they face. They pay huge costs for childcare. They have to pay for private health insurance. They're the issues that we need to deal with. So my point is, if you just let me speak, giving them €5 a week is not going to solve the problems that they face. So that promise of a few euro in their pocket, which was the last budget, was the €5 budget, did not make any real difference to their lives. But
giving
fundamentally
them a number
changing
of things,
how we configure health services,
itself. No, I don't
childcare,
buy this argument.
All those issues are
if you do a number of things for people, if you do a number of things for people, as the Taoiseach did when he was in social protection, the last budget was very redistributive in terms of what we did in social protection. That made a difference in terms of improving the lot for carers, especially people on paternity leave. We've already put a package in for childcare. You do it to a number of things. It's not just this obsession with tax. But I think that the media are obsessed with tax and Leo Varadkar and trying to paint him into some particular... No, hang on. You didn't... I'm not sure, did you read the speech today?
I was there.
Well, if you actually saw the speech or heard the speech, The tax issue was a tiny issue within the context of the speech.
I didn't hear him talk about the housing crisis. Did you hear him talk about childcare?
Did you hear him talk about the system of poverty?
I didn't hear him talk about education.
But I mean, I think that's a speech that actually, if the truth be told, you could sign up to if you believed that you had the money to actually spend it.
All right. I want to take a break there. And when we come back, we'll be talking about bin charges and whether the new charging regime will be a free-for-all for service providers.
Text Late Debate on 51551.
Welcome back to the programme. My guests in studio tonight are Niamh Lyons, Brian Hayes, David Cullinan, Richard Boyd-Barrett and Tony Foley. Now, the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar told the Dáil today that some householders will end up paying more for refuse collection under a new charging regime introduced by Minister Dennis Nocton. The new scheme will see flat fees abolished to be replaced by a pay-by-weight or pay-by-lift system. Niamh Lyons, the timing of this scheme coming at the very end of the Dáil term, is it a surprise? Was it being slipped in under the radar?
I'm not sure it was being slipped in. We were expecting it for a while. There had been a freeze in place. There's now calls to extend that freeze even further. I mean, the Taoiseach himself today was forced to admit that it is likely that some customers will have price increases once those flat rates are abolished. And it's natural. There was below cost selling going on. He also made the point that even if the state was attempting to provide that, prices would go up because, you know, below cost selling just won't work. Fianna Fáil are calling for the establishment of a waste SAR or regulator, someone who would be able to look at it across the board and make sure there was no kind of anti-competitive practices going on. But I suppose the other issue here is how we've heard a lot about people hiding nappies in cereal boxes, and there is going to be a small amount given, €75 a year, to people who would use that type of sanitary stuff for medical conditions, but that's very low. It turns out less than a couple of euro a week for people with medical conditions, and obviously there's a lot of issues involved there. So I think it's something that was kind of a Gordian knot when Simon Coveney was looking after it. Now it just seems to be.
I suppose with water charges kind of parked for the moment, that now is the time, politically speaking, to bring this in before water comes back on the agenda again.
True. I mean, I don't think that any government will ever again be able to introduce a charge that doesn't exist now that water charges, unless revenue decide to try and collect it.
Richard Boyd-Barrett, we need this, don't we? I mean, if you're going to incentivise people to reduce their waste, then there has to be a financial implication if you have a lot of it.
I don't agree at all. I mean, I spent a very long time fighting against the introduction of bin charges and warned at the time when we campaigned against this that it would lead to precisely where we're at now. It would lead first to the privatisation of waste and then to profiteering on the back of waste and charges going through the roof.
If you've got a fixed a fixed bin charge, there's no incentive whatsoever to reduce your waste. You can just dump as much as you want of it in and you pay the same.
No, I fundamentally don't accept that, right? People go all the time.
But isn't that just a fact?
No, it isn't a fact. People, you see, that's assuming that people don't give a damn about the environment. People care a lot about the environment and go to bottle bags. Long before charges were introduced, they went to bottle banks. Once upon a time, you used to recycle all bottles until they brought in plastic bottles for everything. People were well able and willing because they know it's environmentally sound to recycle. The problem is that what we've actually done is just set up a money machine for private waste companies who just want to profiteer off the back of this. It's not doing anything for the environment. In fact, it's damaging the environment, because we're having more fly dumping, we're having more burning of stuff, we're having this incinerator built that nobody wanted that is going to pump out dioxins, which are bad for the environment, instead of actually investing in the recycling and reuse infrastructure that would minimise the waste that is going out into the environment. And that could only have been done properly by the state itself. The private waste companies don't give a damn about that stuff. In fact, the more you recycle, the more they put up your charges, because the more you recycle, the less profit they make.
Has he got a point there, Tony Foley?
Oh, I think he has. If the government learned anything, it should be how to introduce things a bit better than this. Because, first of all, last year it was really no one would be paying extra, or maybe a small percentage, and now some people may be paying more. And it's almost trying to do a new mobile phone package. You'd need about an hour and a half every day to study to see what is the package and what's the impact going
to be. There's no transparency there.
There's also
no, there's absolutely no transparency. I haven't the slightest idea what effect it'll have on me.
And if you can't figure it out.
If you look at some of the perverse incentives that are there, we're told from a health basis that, you know, eat fresh food and cook your vegetables and so on. And of course, if you do that and you boil your potatoes, you then fill up your compost bin. And of course, then you're charged for that. Go out and buy a pizza and get a packet and put the packet into the recycling bin. And in some places you get it free. So, I mean, the perverse incentives in terms of messages that are given. But in terms of the whole policy, I think it's just unacceptable that a government introduces a policy and isn't able to say, here is precisely the situation, here's the consequence, here's the effect. And basically the department saying that we don't have any control over price, that's not just good enough. They're effectively given the licences to the bin companies to collect the stuff. And I have absolutely no confidence that every little bit of weight would be probably estimated and there'd be no mistakes, and there'd be no mistakes to the detriment of the consumer.
David Cullinan, what the minister is saying is that there, because there are a number of waste companies operating in the state, that you'll have competition between them and that'll keep the price down.
Well, that hasn't happened, and I can give examples in my own constituency where we have travelled an awful long way on this issue over the last 30 years, where we had a single operator, which was local councils, to multiple operators. We have waste collection lorries passing themselves out. We have five of them in Waterford. They can't all survive. They're all trying to undercut each other to buy each other out, and that's creating problems for their viability, in my view. But we do have a system in this state where people do recycle. We have either a two bin or a three bin system in all local authorities, and people are encouraged to use the green bin to recycle. What's been proposed here, and I think Tony is 100% right, he's hit on what the core issue is going to be for people. Nobody knows exactly how this will impact them in the pocket, but their instincts tell them that it will be more, because that's what's happened over the last number of years. There's a number of options that will be available to operators. There's a charge per lift, per kilogram, weight bans and weight allowance charges.
Yeah, or they can mix them.
Or they can mix them. But the point is that nobody, it's too much power, in my view, too much control to the operators, with no certainty, no regulation, no control in relation to controlling these costs. And in my view, that's going to be a big mistake on the government's part. And I'd also make the point as well that the vast majority of people in this state do want to recycle, are responsible. And my concern here is this, that if you move away from a system...
If you don't incentivise them though, David, like if there's no incentive to do it, people will drift away from it.
Well, so with respect, the biggest polluters are the people who produce all the needless packaging. I mean, if you go into a supermarket and look at all the packaging you have on your goods, I prefer if there was receptacles in supermarkets where I could dump all of the rubbish before I leave. If we actually had laws that reduced down the endless amount of needless packaging that's produced, would be the first start. That doesn't happen. So I don't buy that argument.
Or the fact that apartment buildings across the country, the bins are lifted into the same truck, so people would recycle in their homes.
Yeah,
there's separate bins in their garage, but they all go into the one and place.
Brian Hayes, the government has said that it will play no role in setting prices. It'll be, you know, they've now released this into the wild, and the waste companies, they can set whatever prices they want.
Well, the first thing to say is my understanding is that 50% of the country are currently paying their bin charges on a weighted basis.
Yes.
And I think everyone accepts if you have a flat rate charge, there is really no incentivization around recycling. One of the things, there are two things that have happened. I think the last number of years we've seen this exponential rise in the number of landfill sites being used, and the whole objective of recycle and reuse was to move away from that by a number of things on the terminal treatment side, but equally on better utilisation of facilities around the country and recycling. The other problem is, of course, internationally, the bottom has fallen out of the recycling market as well, which wasn't either predictable or predicted at the time when this new system was introduced. So I think the key issue will be what system is implemented which can ensure that people are incentivized by recycling. Now, my understanding is that the final rollout of these brown bins is part of this initiative to give people some kind of options there, because the other thing that came from the minister today, as I understand, was this extraordinary sum he has managed to produce, that 700 million euros worth of food is wasted every single year. There's a whole range of things we have to do here, but I think it has to be around incentivizing good behaviour.
Yeah,
and I think whether it is weighted by kilo, or the other options that are there are weighted by band, that has to be considered.
Can I just say, Justin, that next week in the Dáil Sinn Féin will move a private member's motion on this to get the certainty that we don't have at the moment from government, because I think it's been quite rightly articulated that because people don't know exactly how this will work.
So the private member's motion is calling on the minister not to proceed with the new charging regime. And that's
designed
presumably to put pressure on Fianna Fáil, is that right?
Well, no, to put pressure on the government primarily, but obviously the government would include Fianna Fáil.
It's just another example of the UCD debating society at work.
In their nice plum job.
I want to give Richard the final word on this topic before we move on.
First of all, since bin charges have been introduced, the environmental damage has increased. It hasn't been good for the environment, it's been bad for the environment, right? Let's start with that. There's been more illegal dumping, more burning, which is very bad for the environment.
There's more recycling, though.
Yeah, but there's more environmental damage being done. And there's not going to be much recycling now because we have a huge incinerator sitting out there on Poolbeg Peninsula that needs to be fed, right? And that's going to reduce the incentive to recycle. An awful lot of the rubbish now, both the recycled stuff and the general waste are all going to go out to that incinerator to be burnt. That's first of all. Secondly, with the private companies, as we saw a year ago, remember there was a big blow-up about this when they tried to increase the charge just for the green bins. It is bad for the private waste company if you recycle too much, right? Because it reduces the profits they can make. This is critical. So if you allow them to set the prices, they will actually jack up the charges on the recycling. The whole principle of providing incentive is the more you recycle, the less you should pay. That's not actually what's happening. And they wanted to jack up and still want to jack up the charges because they're not making as much money on the export of the recycled waste to places like China as they
that
used to make.
Down.
So the market yet again is impacting on the issue.
But okay. I did predict at the time when the big debate was on bin charges, when you know there were standoffs, people's rubbish wasn't created, and you were playing politics with the issue right the way across
we
the city of Dublin.
It shouldn't have been introduced.
As a consequence of that, I made a prediction at the time, which has proven to be right, that the public sector would simply collapse, and it did because we didn't have an efficient system at the time. Don't pretend that we did.
No,
I'm not. The current system is not perfect.
It would be privatized.
The current system is not perfect at all.
You privatized.
But because you didn't want any system there at all.
We wanted
wanted to play
system of a
politics
public,
with
a public
the bin charges issue. That's exactly what happened. I remember. I was on the council at the time.
Nonsense, Brian.
All right, I want to move on just briefly to touch on the Northern Ireland talks. Agreement on a new Irish Language Act for Northern Ireland appears to be standing in the way of getting a functioning executive back up and running in Stormont. Tomorrow is the deadline for a deal. The parties have until 4 o'clock tomorrow to reach a deal or face the prospect of direct rule from London. Niamh Lyons, we started this with an argument over the RHI scandal. It's now moved to an Irish Language Act. Where do you see this going?
Well, it's interesting that Arlene Foster seems to have taken a little bit of a journey. She used the words Sinn Féin back at Sinn Féin there recently in a quip. There does seem to be some understanding at DUP level now that this is a sort of a heartland issue for Sinn Féin and will have to be resolved. Simon Coveney coming out this evening and sort of endorsing Anocht na Gaeilge is obviously very important. I suppose the only problem now for the unionists, Robin Swan of the UUP, has said they won't countenance that. So, I mean, we're kind of in a five-party situation at these talks at the moment. Obviously, Sinn Féin and the DUP are the two most important. I think we may get to a situation where tomorrow morning there might be the kind of a broad outline of a deal, and then perhaps James Brokenshire, the British Secretary of State for Northern Ireland, would then feel that he can perhaps extend it out briefly, maybe into the beginning of next week, just to allow that to get over the line. But we are very much running out of time at the moment. And I think we heard the Taoiseach today and James Brokenshire in Westminster saying the same thing. You know, these are the parties that are going to be most impacted and the areas that are going to be most impacted by Brexit. They really need to get their heads together. And of course, as well, they can't spend the 1 billion boon from Theresa May's government
until
if they don't
there.
Have an executive in place. Yeah.
David Cullinan, why is an Irish Language Act such a critical issue for Sinn Féin in these talks?
Well, it isn't just a critical issue for Sinn Féin. It's an issue for nationalists in the north. It's an issue also for the SDLP, and it's an equality issue. It isn't just the Irish language.
There are other equality issues too.
Absolutely, and I'm going to get to that point, because what the Assembly was collapsed not simply because of the RHI scandal. That was one of the issues.
It was the main issue, wasn't it?
No, it was the arrogance of the DUP at the time, where there was a whole raft of outstanding issues in respect of the Good Friday Agreement which have not been implemented. In fact, the Irish government is also in default of the Good Friday Agreement, as are the British government. There's legacy issues which need to be dealt with. There was an outline of an agreement on information retrieval and recovery which we want to put in place. There's a Bill of Rights, an All-Ireland Bill of Rights, which was...
Do you think the Irish language should be given parity with... that Ulster Scots should be given parity with the Irish language?
These are issues that are on the table and are being negotiated. So what we want, and all we've said, and we were very clear from the outset, we did not put any new obligations, any new preconditions on the table. We simply said that we have to arrive at a point where commitments which are given are honoured. We were not able to continue with a situation where agreements which we signed up to, and then we do our part, and then others who sign up to it and don't honour their commitments are not done. It simply wasn't something that the people who we represent were going to accept. And if you look at the last two elections in the North, the Sinn Féin vote was up very dramatically because of the position that we took, and because we are in Sinn Féin, where the vast majority of nationalists are. I'm obviously hopeful that there will be a deal. We want power sharing in place. Martin McGuinness stretched Sinn Féin enormously over the course of 10 years to work with three unionist leaders, because we believe in parity of esteem. We believe in equality. Issues like marriage equality are important to people in the north that we represent as much as they were to people in the south.
Marriage equality looks like it could be the first very interesting vote if it gets back up and running, because this petition of concern obviously isn't going to be able to be used in the same way.
Yeah.
I think, though, what was interesting about today is that Sinn Féin modulated its language a little bit on Arlene Foster retaining the position of First Minister. And that's important, because really that particular standoff, one party trying to engage in the top levels of another party, was, you know, really bogging you down in a way that didn't need. So but at least now you're back on policy issues.
I think there's one reality that's going to dawn on the parties in Northern Ireland. When you look at the recent election result, which is a very good result for Sinn Féin and the DUP, both of the leading Green and Orange parties, I think on a very substantial turnout, the idea that this stage, where effectively they have 1.5 billion additional to spend over the next 2 years, which has to be spent by the Assembly and the Executive on things that I think we all think need to be spent in Northern Ireland on investment, which is a useful thing, and a kind of a high point, if you like, for Arlene Foster's negotiation, because she was at a very low ebb, and I think Niamh is right. Over the course of a few months, after a bad Assembly election, she did begin to reach out, I think, to the Irish language community in Northern Ireland, and also made some very positive speeches in relation to Brexit.
But Peter Robinson said today that Sinn Féin were conned into thinking that they would get an Irish language act by Tony Blair, and he says that his party never agreed to that.
Yeah, but I think this is the point I'm going to make. The idea that we cannot make progress now or get a functioning government in Northern Ireland working again on a cross-community basis at this stage, with all of the headwind that is there in terms of the additional fiscal space that they have in the next 2 years, I think is laughable. On the basis that what most people want in Northern Ireland is the government working again across all of the parties. Now, I think, yeah, there has to be agreement, David. But equally, I mean, it was your party that actually brought down the Assembly and that brought down the Executive on the basis that you couldn't work with Arlene Foster. Now you're saying, as I understand it, you will put her back.
No, no.
We've wasted a lot of... No, hang on, I didn't interrupt you.
Some parties
The fact of the matter is this. Sinn Féin demolished the Assembly. They then went to Assembly elections. We then went to a situation where both the DUP and the Sinn Féin have done very well in the recent election. What people in Northern Ireland want is the government up and running. And here's the point. If we are going to get a good outcome on Brexit, what people in Brussels are telling me is that they want the government in Stormont working to work with the British and Irish governments to come up with a solution to the problems that
if we have. Richard Boyd Barrett, want, Richard. If you know what the people of the North want, Richard just one point first. If you know what the people of the North want,
come in then again.
Stand in the election.
The hard left are
Fine Gael should stand in Northern elections if you really, if you understand.
But I mean, I'm not standing in Northern Ireland.
Can I bring Richard Boyd Barrett in on this, please, Brian?
Outside.
Okay, first of all, there was a very, very good reason to demand an election. And as it happens, the first person in this the assembly to call for that election was Eamon McCann over the RHI scandal. That's a fact. He lost his seat, indeed, because things polarised around the green and orange. That's what's happened. And it's very obvious. But that scandal remains unresolved. €500 million to be burnt, right? An utter scandal. And it's surprising Brian doesn't say anything about that as if it was just a whim that Arlene Foster's head should be called for. It wasn't a whim.
I'm not looking for heads. I'm just looking for a government.
Hold on, Brian. Brian, I didn't interrupt you.
You're the headhunter. You're the headhunter.
No. Brian, do you think somebody should be held account if
Absolutely.
€500 million...
And that's
euro,
why an inquiry is going to be held, as I understand.
€500 million...
Yes, I do, actually.
Yeah, okay. So it was entirely legitimate to call for an election on the basis that the person who was responsible for that, Arlene Foster, couldn't explain what was going on, right?
You didn't expect to have moved on from that.
Hold on. No.
But Sinn Féin have moved on from that.
That scandal remains. But what has happened in the meantime is a polarisation around green and orange, which quite frankly is not terribly helpful. I do agree with Sinn Féin 100% that, and I don't see why Arlene Foster, other than for purely sectarian reasons, is holding out against the Irish Language Act, because that's just pure sectarianism, and she's trying to shore up her base on that basis. But I tell you, both Sinn Féin and Arlene Foster are reluctant about getting back into government together. Guess why? Because there's another agreement, an austerity agreement, which they both signed up to, and they're not very keen to actually have to be responsible for implementing it.
I have about 30 seconds. 20,000. Yeah.
Let's see how the electorate feels when the jobs start to get cut.
Tony, last word to you. Do you think that the £1.5 billion that Arlene Foster secured in London, that will galvanise the two sides?
I think there will be a deal, and I don't think the DUP should be too worried about an Irish Language Act. Look at our performance since independence in developing the Irish language. They're not going to have all the nationalist population going around speaking Gaelic, so they've little to worry about.
All right, a couple of headlines in this evening. The Irish Examiner: scale of bin charge rises, a mystery, waste companies tight-lipped on what customers will have to pay. So some of the points we've been discussing there this evening. Gardaí to withdraw armed cover across Munster, and Dáil Committee seeks clarity on CIT financial matters. And the London Independent: Hillsborough, 96 deaths, 28 years, and now finally the first day of justice. My thanks to my panel this evening, Niamh Lyons, Brian Hayes, David Cullinan, Richard Boyd Barrett and Tony Foley. And to my production team, producer Anne Farrell, researcher Annette Egan, broadcast coordinator David Phelan, and on sound Gara Duffy. That's it from myself, Justin McCarthy, for tonight. Tomorrow we'll be broadcasting live from the GAA Museum in Croke Park for a discussion on sport and politics. So join us then, but do stay with us now as I hand you over to Cathal Murray for Late Date.